section 15 first, because that has some more specifics to it, and then I can go and ramble a bit with regard to question 9. Individuals who did things that were important for the future development of the university as a whole, or some part of it. Well, there are two people who I see as very important in both our departmental development and later on, of course, in the whole university development. At the departmental level, Ollie Schaefer was a superb first chairman. This was because he had an infinite amount of chutzpah and was a completely unscrupulous con man when it came to doing things for his department. He was able to generate lines and generate money and make the place what he had in his mind very cleverly and very effectively, to the great dismay, I think, of administration leaders at that time who didn't trust him as far as they could throw him, probably with good reason. But at the time when we were growing, we needed that kind of a chairman. It took us two chairmen after Ollie to reestablish credibility with the administration, but Ollie did the things that needed to be done to build the department. He generated a building plan by himself, which came in slightly under budget so that we didn't have long delays in getting the building built. He pushed for lines and used those lines effectively. He consistently overspent the budget by horrendous amounts, but because the budget was growing every year, he got bailed out, so we established a good budgetary base for the future of the department. Couldn't have asked probably for a better person to be in that position at that time for the kind of growth that was going on. The other person who got a lot of flack was Johnny Toll, but Johnny was the right president at the right time. He was a builder. He had a thick skin. He was able to put the campus together, and he took the long view and held to it through a great deal of shot and shell and an extremely trying time, which was the riot years. And we have, I think, the physical plant that we have because of Johnny's style and capabilities. I guess he didn't have a lot of credibility in Albany for many of the same reasons, perhaps, that Ollie didn't have much credibility with the administration. But at the time, he was the right person for president, and I think we owe him a great deal. I see most of the other players as being important players one way or the other, but for the specific individuals who did specific things, I'll stick just with those two. Now to question 9, which is events, persons, and experiences that stand out in your mind. Well, persons I kind of dealt with, but as far as events, let me sort of run down those critical 4 years in order in terms of events that stand out. I should mention that I have an advantage in this, in that I had been communicating to my parents on a weekly basis for many years and continued to do so all the time I was at Stony Brook. And my mother saved all those letters. So I have a series of notebooks with letters, more or less weekly letters, describing what was going on through the entire early period of Stony Brook development. Now, not everything is detailed in great order, but there's a lot of information there, and I was able, therefore, to refresh myself and reconstruct a lot of what was going on. Back in the 1966-67 academic year, the building equipment list was a major item of activity, as mentioned earlier. Very shortly after I came, I think in September of 1966, our building had been approved to start construction. At that time, we were occupying space in the old physics building. In fact, I displaced Peter Kahn, who was then a fresh assistant professor, from his office when I first arrived in order to have an office for myself. This was accomplished, I presume, by Ollie. But anyhow, at least for a while, Peter was bounced out of his office, and I took that space. We watched our building grow during that year, and of course, we were in a major recruiting mode. recruiting was a little hectic the first year because we had Sam Goldick, who had one set of opinions. Ollie had a very different set of opinions. And other faculty, myself, and by then Gil Hansen, and Bob Dodd, were tending to more or less side with Ollie on our decisions and not agree with Sam on his recommendations as to who we should look at. So we looked at a lot of candidates, and for many of the candidates, we had faculty recommendations that were not unanimous, but they were short by one. So we had a positive recommendation to the dean and then one angry letter from Sam telling him that we were crazy. I don't think we were crazy, and I think we made some good decisions, but we did a lot of those over Sam's dead body. And in fact, it wasn't too much later that Sam just set up with us and left. He's still a good friend, so I shouldn't say that in a negative, right? But he just, in his opinion, didn't think we were going anywhere. By the time we got to 1967, 1968, the building was still being constructed. We didn't move into it for another academic year, but we were busy already preparing a proposal to offer a PhD, and by halfway through the year, at the end of the fall semester, we had the evaluating committee come to campus to look at our proposal and judge that, in fact, we could begin a PhD program, probably with the subsequent season. Now, Ollie, in his inimitable way, already had a graduate student who was well along, so we had our first PhD very shortly after we had the PhD program approved. The other major event in my experience at Stony Brook was the beginning of the residential college program. This was Larry DeBoer's idea, and he approached several of the faculty members to see if we would be interested in serving as college masters in a residential college program. At this point, the dorms themselves were still under construction. We agreed to do this if I could have my wife as a program coordinator. And so Pat and I took on Whitman College that fall. The building wasn't quite finished at the beginning of the semester, and we didn't even have a name. In fact, one of the very early exercises was for the students. This was a girls' dorm, and we preferred this. It was for the girls in the dorm to select from the state-approved list of names the name for the college, and they chose Whitman. A good bit of that 1967-68 academic year was therefore divided not only between the department and the equipment list and the growing in the building, but in setting up some kind of a program that was functional in our dorm. We had a good bunch of students, and we had one of the more civilized dorms on campus, at least we thought so, and it was also a great deal of fun to be involved with this. Another side activity was planning the Marine Sciences Research Center that year, or that academic year. We began recruiting directors and ultimately hired Don Squires away from the U.S. National Museum. And that was the year that we not only did that, but went down and set the space up at Discovery Bay and had a very ambitious program started in the marine sciences. That year is also the year when the student unrest began to get a little serious. The first major event, which there were a lot of minor events, but the first major event that I remember was the day when the janitor or the custodian in the library came out at noontime, began to rain, and lowered the flag at the same time that the students protesting, whatever they were protesting at the moment, had threatened to lower the flag as part of the protest, and all of the construction workers on the student union who were down in a low spot and could only see the flagpole and not at the base of the flag, thought the students had lowered the flag and came roaring up the hill and had a grand melee until it was all sorted out. In January of that year was the first drug raid on campus, and according to the notes in my letter, it appears that the raid was politically motivated and was done more to raise the political power of the county officials than anything to do with the campus administration getting involved. In fact, they weren't even informed of the raid, but it certainly didn't help in student morale or in generally keeping things under control, especially because the raid happened during final exams at the end of the first semester. Of course, that year we were also still very heavily into faculty recruiting, which meant that we listened to interminable seminars in areas that we weren't particularly concerned with and hosted interminable visitors because we had very few faculty on our own side, so every time we had a visitor, we were all involved in the hosting process. Moving on to the 1968-1969 academic year, we occupied the Earth and Space Sciences building at the beginning of the fall semester, more or less, but there was a great deal of confusion on campus as a whole. Buildings that had been planned for completion in turn to start the semester were not finished. Students were not adequately informed of where their classes were being held. The place was dug up, and the place would be viewed by the student body now as a general zoo. It was at this time that I think Sid Gelber suggested that we have take 3 days off to kind of look the whole situation over and interact between faculty and students and come up with some concrete suggestions that might help to make the place work a little better. This was a very effective three-day exercise and involved a good many people and resulted in some kind of a white paper, as I recall, that was an important document in the early development and changes that took place on the Stony Brook campus. In springtime, we were, of course, continuing to have the problems of student unrest because of the Vietnam War and the general chaos on campus and what was viewed by the students in the arts and humanities as a decidedly cold and uncaring attitude by the faculty and by the administration concerning their needs. However, in around all of this, we had the official dedications of both Whitman College and Cardozo College, which were very, very impressive affairs. We had outside speakers and a several-day program dedicated to Whitman and his works and his ideas, and a great deal of student participation. One of the girls in the dorm had a father who donated a bronze plaque, which he was a maker of such things, donated a bronze plaque of Whitman, which was ultimately fastened to the wall and subsequently stolen. Spring semester, toward the end of 1969 spring semester, was when we had the first of the end of semester riots that totally disrupted the campus and divided it along the lines of those who felt the riots were justified and those who wanted to get on about the business of teaching students. Partly as a function of the chaos, we lost two of the early young faculty that we had hired. Ray Smith got totally turned off by the whole system and the harassment that he got from students. He was a fairly conservative person, and he ultimately decided that the solution to the grading problem was to give everybody an A, and then nobody would harass him. And that ultimately led to his downfall. The other faculty person was an absolutely first-rate fellow by the name of Pete Rose, who was the top graduate student in geology at the University of Texas, and who had already had 7 years of real-world experience before he'd gone back to get his PhD. So he was an extremely fine and well-prepared teacher and well-liked by the students. But Pete was also 35, and he saw faculty being pushed around by an angry student mob, and he said, the hell with it. He wasn't going to go to a place that couldn't handle itself better than that, and he took off and ultimately went on to make quite a name for himself in industry and also with the U.S. Geological Survey. As for the riot period itself, this had some very interesting features to it that I will explore on another tape because I'm really just about to the end of this one. So I'll continue on another tape if I can find one.